so are you ready for the first question?
Sure.
Okay, the first question I have is the time frame of the proposed regulations. House Bill 278 was passed on April 25th, 2014. It was signed by Governor Parnell on May 14th, 2014. On April 2nd, 2014, Deed signed off on a contract with the University of Kansas, the Achieve Assessment Institute, for $100,308 to essentially start the scope of work for student testing of Alaska standards. On July 10th, 2014, Deed signed another contract with the University of Kansas for $3.8 million to develop the actual test for the Alaska standards. Then on July 15, 2014, 5 days later, Deed signed another contract for $705,000 to the University of Kansas because of an incorrect dollar amount. Can you please explain why state monies have been committed and efforts before the regulation changes have even been adopted?
Sure. The regulation changes don't have anything to do with the new assessment. The contract for an assessment doesn't require additional regulation simply because the responsibilities for the department are already in regards to assessing our students and are already listed in statute and regulation 1407.020b2. These are the department shall develop a comprehensive system of student assessments. And the regulation around that is that the commissioner shall select the standards-based assessment to estimate the degree to which students have mastered academic performance standards. So the determination of a vendor for an assessment doesn't require, it's not a regulatory process, it's a procurement process like any other contract that we offer or anybody in the state does. That procurement process is designed to be, is designed to make sure that there's a fair process that has integrity and does the best it can to make sure that the state gets a fair and honest product and the most bang for its buck. So we went through a procurement process for our contract, but it didn't require a separate regulation to do so.
Okay, so can you explain, as I understand, the State Board of Education isn't even set to discuss these regulations until September 18th. Public hearing stops on August 15th. Then they go up to the Department of Law for review, finalize, and then Lieutenant Governor for signing. 30 days later, they take effect. With all that, the earliest these regulations become effect is November and December. Am I correct in that time frame?
It's pretty close, yes. So once the board adopts it, you're right, it has to go to the Lieutenant Governor, and then 30 days after the Lieutenant Governor signs it, they become effective.
Okay, so the regs that we're discussing is 4AAC 6.790. It looks at the regulation associated with the high school qualifying exam. Require students seeking a diploma to take the SAT, ACT, and WorkKeys tests in 11th or 12th grade, and adopt by reference the Alaska Supplemental for WorkKeys Assessment dated June of 2014.
Yes.
So there are numerous questions regarding these regulations. First of all, can you explain how the $705,000 error on the original contract with the University of Kansas, can you explain that, please?
It was a clerical error on the contract.
So is that $705,000 error for 5 years, so it's really actually a $3.5 million error?
No.
It was a one time, just 1 year?
Yeah, it was just a clarification. Yes.
Okay, so the complete error is a total of $705,000.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. In regards to 4AAC 06.717, the College and Career Readiness Assessments, the intent of the regulation certainly seems to match House Bill 278, but there's a question. In Section B, it says the requirements under A in this section are met if student takes one, an SAT, two, ACT, or three work keys. What does take the test mean?
That they participate and receive a valid score.
So take the test and receive a valid score.
Yeah, they participate and receive a valid score, yes.
Okay, what is a valid score?
A score that reflects the input of the student. Yeah, that accurately reflects the input of the student.
Okay, are there any cut scores?
No, the legislature didn't put any cut scores in.
Okay, so would you consider these high-stakes assessments or not?
These are not high-stakes. No, the legislature simply, they removed the high-stakes exam of HSG3, the high school graduation qualifying exam, and instead put in, they moved from passing that assessment to participating in ACT, SAT, or work keys.
Okay, so tell me, if a student comes in and signs their name on one of these state-paid-for ACT, SAT, or work keys exam, puts their name, have they taken the exam?
No, they wouldn't generate any score.
Okay, so they're actually required to just, do they have to take the complete test, or?
Obviously, they wouldn't have to take, if there are questions they didn't know, they wouldn't have to take the complete test, but they would need to generate a score.
Okay. But there's no cut score in regards to these. So what's the purpose of having a student take these tests then? This is going to cost the state a lot of money, so I need to get to the bottom of this.
Well, this is not driven by regulation. This is driven by HB 278. This is driven by the legislature this last session. The regulation
Right, and we discussed this. In our committee, we had this stripped out of there. In the education committee, we had college and career readiness stripped out, and we didn't feel it was appropriate the state be paying for ACT, SAT, or work keys. We believe that was a parent's responsibility. So with that, I just need to know what's the purpose of this, SAT, ACT, and work keys.
I will share what I believe the purpose is, and it's probably important to talk to other members of the legislature to clarify. But the HSGQE cost the state in the ballpark of $2.7 million. The removal of that allowed for a much smaller amount to inform parents and students as to their readiness for success in work and education. As you're aware, previously, the work keys was required of all students in 11th grade. So by changing this, the legislature didn't add new assessments. They simply added an option. Students won't be required to take the work keys. Now, they'll have an option of taking the work keys, the SAT, or the ACT. So it's simply providing them an option that best affects or informs their decision to move into a career or to college. So that's my understanding of the intent.
Okay, in these college and career ready assessments that are defined as SAT, ACT, or work keys, was this a requirement of the No Child Left Behind waiver?
No.
They were not. So college and career readiness were not a requirement.
Those assessments are not required. We needed to have some things in place. We need to have a set of standards in place that prepare kids for success in work and education beyond high school.
Okay. But the assessments are not required for the No Child Left Behind waivers. That's what you're stating.
Correct. I think that was clear in the legislature when one part of the legislature, I think it was, you said it was your committee that removed them. You wouldn't have been able to remove them if they were required, so that's correct.
Okay. Okay, so we didn't sign the No Child Left Behind waiver. Deed did. So, you know, you guys were part of that interaction. That was not, so your position is the assessments are not required as part of the No Child Left Behind waiver. I just want to make sure I got this clear.
They're not.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so what is going to happen? Do you know with the scores from these assessments that the state's going to now be paying for?
Can you repeat that question?
What will happen to the scores on these assessments? Is Deed going to be collecting and storing these assessments since the state's going to be paying for these?
Yes, they'll be a part of ours, but they'll be protected in the same way that our other assessments are and other student data is. The driver, though, for all of these is not state data, but it is really data at the local level to inform students and educators on student readiness. So currently our WorkEase is already a part of our data system, so it simply allows these other ones to be a part of that as well.
And what is the data system called? You just said that we have a data system where you store this information. Is there a specific name for that? What do you use?
It's called our OASIS system. All our school districts recognize when they input data, it's into our OASIS system. It's the one we've been using for years. Representative Rangel, can I ask a question? I wasn't sure. I mean, I assume we're officially on the record as part of this hearing, but I wasn't aware of who was there or what numbers were there or anything else. I didn't get any introductions.
That was at the beginning of the hearing when I opened up. Representative Hawker is here. Representative Tarr is on her way. Representative Gaddis is online. And we've got a few members of the public.
Okay, thank you.
And they're going to bring me other people that are online in a few minutes. Okay, so next question is, do you foresee any situation where a student refusing to actually complete one of these tests might hurt the student's future?
Complete the test? Is that the question? Refusing to complete the test?
Correct.
Well, I think we talked about that, that if a student didn't finish it, all the way that they would still generate a score and they would still qualify for a diploma.
Okay, so therefore, do you see a benefit for this to be clarified in statute that a child will explicitly not be forced to complete this exam?
It seems to be clear to me. It seems to be that if students... let me pull up HB 278 for the exact language. It is Section 3. A school may not issue a secondary school diploma to a student unless the student takes a college and career readiness assessment or receives a waiver from the governing body. A school shall award a certificate of achievement to a student who fails to qualify for a diploma under this section. The department shall provide a funding for the fee for single administration. I read that as being pretty clear. I couldn't speak to the legislature as to whether they think that the definition of this, unless a student takes a college and career ready assessment,
it says on here, a school may not issue a secondary school diploma to a student unless the student takes a college and career readiness assessment or receives a waiver from the governing body. Who is the governing body?
The school board, their local school board.
Excuse me, the who?
Their local school board.
The local school boards will be the ones that, if a student wants a diploma, they're going to be now required to take an ACT, SAT, or WorkEase, and if they do not wish to take this and want to get a diploma, they have to go to the governing body. They have to go to the local school board.
That's the way the legislature wrote this, yes.
Okay. So we're going to move on now to the accelerated time frame of the standard-based test. And you were actively involved in helping with 278. I saw you down there, you know, each and every step of the way this omnibus, the governor's omnibus bill. So you helped write this House Bill 278. Is that correct?
I worked with the governor. The governor put a lot of things. You're aware that the governor put a lot of things. Actually introduced most components of 278, and I was a part of the conversations with the governor around that.
Right, and I know there was a complete discrepancy between the House and the Senate in regards to this, and that the House blocked the version that was unanimously passed in the Senate. We're gonna move on to the accelerated time frame of these standard-based tests that are in regulation now. Prior was in regards to the final test of a youth education, which essentially was to replace the HSQE, but now the yearly standards-based test. In 4AAC06.737, you've accelerated by one full year the requirement to start the standard-based test based on the Alaska standards. Can you explain that?
Sure. It's simply a shift. We've had SBAs in place for many years now. And so that part isn't changing. Students will continue to take an assessment in grades 3 through 10, a standards-based assessment. The shift is from an assessment that's based on our previous standards to the shift of an assessment based on our new standards. Originally, we had considered that 2016 would be the date for that. We looked at the advantages of getting out of some of the more ominous and restrictive parts of No Child Left Behind and pursuing a waiver from that and giving Alaska a little bit more freedom. One of the components was to make that adjustment to 2015, to test in 2015, which is the 2014-15 school year, and assess in 2014-15 instead of 15-16. And so that's when this adjustment has been made. This is what I call for the stakeholders who are involved, for the superintendents, for the school districts, all of them know and have known for a couple of years now that we are moving to this assessment. It might not have been a couple of years, a year and a half anyway, to this new assessment in 2015. This is a cleanup of the regulations that moves that, that recognizes that date of 2015.
Okay, so you are stating, yes, that this change does have to do with the No Child Left Behind waiver. So essentially, you are catching up with your promise to the U.S. Department of Education in May of 2013 to make sure you started the student testing this year, correct?
We're not catching up. When we applied for the waiver and we pushed on where we could and we worked with them and compromised and made the compromise and We agreed to implement certain things, and one of them was an assessment, assessing students on the new standards in 2015. So this is a cleanup of the regulation to match the expectation that our stakeholders currently have and understanding that they currently have. So I don't know if it's a catch-up or a cleanup. We just consider it a cleanup.
Catch-up and cleanup, that's technical words. The bottom line is that you did make a commitment to the U.S. Department of Education that you would have these assessments in place this year, and that's basically what this regulation change, this cleanup of regulation is it's jumping it from the year 2015 to this year. So the test, do you see any problems with making this change and accelerating this an entire year?
No. In a perfect world, another year for students to address the standards, would that be beneficial potentially? But it simply moves us into our new standards and an assessment towards the new standards a year soon.
Okay, so you see no problem accelerating this an entire year?
No.
Okay, and the tests aren't even done, correct? Is that right?
They're being completed, but no, they're not done.
Okay, so the tests are not done. Do you think it's a good idea to start a school year with unknown tests required at the end of the year and to be teaching to a curriculum that may or not be on target with these tests? Yes or no?
we test what we teach as opposed to teaching what we test. So the importance of having a test prior to teaching is really, I consider, a backwards mentality. It's that thought that people say, oh, to teach to the test, we don't have to teach to the test. The test is supposed to reflect what we're teaching, and that's based on our current set of standards. So hopefully, and actually for the last, since 2012, we've been focused, and our districts have been focused on teaching to the standards that we've deemed appropriate so that our kids are will be prepared to be successful in work and careers. So having a test, it'd be nice to have it done sooner, but it's not the driver of what we teach right now.
So bottom line, you think it's fine that we're going into these tests right now when we're not even certain that the curriculum is aligned to these tests is what I'm hearing from you. So if you notified the 53 school districts, have you notified the 53 school districts? And what's their response to this accelerated plan?
As I mentioned, they've known for over a year now that we're moving to this new assessment. And just to clarify, I didn't say that the curriculum should be aligned to the test. The curriculum is aligned to our expectations for students to learn at each grade level. Those are the standards. The test simply reflects what we teach. So districts aren't driven by what's on the test. They should be driven by what we need our students to know, and that's based on the expectations represented in the standards.
Okay, so the curriculum needs to be aligned to the standards, obviously.
Correct.
So that my question to you, I'll repeat it. Do you think it's a good idea to start a school year with unknown tests required at the end of the year and to be teaching curriculum that may or not be aligned to these tests?
I don't know how to answer that again, Representative Reingold. The curriculum is not supposed to be aligned to the test. It's supposed to be aligned to the standards. But I will say that every year, assessments change. They are not, we refresh items on our tests every year. But granted, this one's a little bit bigger because we're shifting from strictly paper and pencil to partially electronic, electronic wherever we can. But we are always refreshing and changing our assessments to keep them current and keep them balanced. So we're always in the process of changing a test and it's in a state of change.
Okay, so I just want to repeat what you said. You said the curriculum is not aligned to the test, but to the standards.
Yes.
Okay, that we will definitely explore that later.
Okay.
So what would happen if we just kept the current time schedule so the change could be more easily adopted?
What would be your expectation that would happen this year?
Excuse me?
If that were the case, What would be your expectation? What would happen this year? I guess I'm trying to clarify.
I guess I'm asking you, what would happen if we just kept the current time schedule so the change could more easily be adopted by the different districts?
So we have shifted vendors from our previous vendor that provided the SBAs to our new vendor that will provide our new assessment. So are you suggesting that we keep the same assessment that we've had in the past and test our old standards again?
I'm just very concerned with the accelerated plan. I'm not sure that people are ready, that teachers are ready, that curriculum is ready, and it brings me concern because I know that the teachers are being evaluated based on the outcomes of these assessments. And my understanding is the teachers are not developing the standards, the assessments. They're not administering the tests, but they're being evaluated on the test. Is that correct?
The tie of teacher evaluations to student learning doesn't take place for another 2 years. And so that's a little ways down the road. It has to use multiple measures. So the statewide assessment can only be one of those multiple measures. We've actually got 2 to 4 measures. So for the portion that is tied to student learning, 2 to 4 measures need to be used. We still have, of the 8 teacher standards, only 1 changed. The other 7 are still in place that have always been in place. The only one that's changed is the adjustment to recognizing student learning in there, but that's still 2 years down the road.
So are the teachers designing these tests, or are they, even in 2 years, that's irrelevant as far as I'm concerned, but are the teachers designing the tests, and are the teachers administering these tests?
The University of Kansas is working directly with Alaska stakeholders to customize the test for Alaska. Recently, we've been doing I'm just looking at some of my paperwork on the new assessment, the AMP assessment, and we've had item writing workshops. So for some of our reading passages and our writing passages, we've had actually Alaskan educators writing those with professionals that help us make sure that we're measuring the right standard and measuring what we're trying to measure. So we have had Alaska input on those. We're currently in the process of having, we've invited Alaskan educators to apply to be reviewers of the items that are going to be on the assessment. We've had over 500 Alaskan educators apply. We're actually anticipating we might hit 1,000. These will all be individuals, Alaskan educators, who will be reviewing items to make sure that they are sensitive, they're free of bias, they're accurate as far as content, and sensitivity for the Alaska content text. So we're pretty excited, actually, about this company and the work that we're doing indeed. To involve a lot of stakeholders to make sure we have a valid test. And that's really the biggest difference between ours and a lot of other tests, obviously the ones that are being developed by the two consortia.
So my question is that if an English teacher has a classroom for the year, does she develop her own tests and does she administer those tests?
No, teachers don't develop.
Not as far as
assessment, they can do other assessments that they would use as one of the other measures. So they can use multiple different tools. They can use portfolios. They can use writing samples. They can use a lot of different tools to measure a student's growth. So you'd have to have like a pre and a post to measure growth, but they'll do that part. But the statewide assessment obviously won't be written by individual teachers and given by individual teachers.
Okay, so do you see any downside to teachers being required to administer tests that they haven't prepared their students to take? Are you saying they don't even administer these tests, is my understanding?
It kind of goes back to the previous question that if teachers are teaching students towards our standards, they'll be prepared for the assessments. They shouldn't be teaching them towards the test. They should be teaching them towards the standards. And then, as we currently do, teachers and other support staff provide, give these tests. I say give them, provide the area and the space and the time to give these tests. We also have, as part of our new contract, interim assessments that are aligned to the summative assessment. Those interim assessments are optional, but they will give teachers an understanding, an idea that of just where the students are as they move towards the end of the year towards the summative assessment.
So are these tests going to be used to students in school districts that have adopted the Common Core standards, such as the Anchorage School District?
These assessments will be given statewide for all districts.
Okay, so are they being designed for both Alaska Standard students and the Common Core students?
No, only Alaska Standards are being assessed. Any district that has chosen, as is their local right, to adopt a different set of standards. We have an expectation that all students will be taught and move toward proficiency in the Alaska standards. if a district wanted to choose a different set that were equal or higher, and felt that they could still address the Alaska standards, they have that ability, but we will be assessing on the Alaska standards.
Okay, so I want to make sure I heard you right. These tests are not being aligned to the Common Core.
No, Kansas is customizing an assessment for the Alaska state standards, Alaska academic standards.
So these tests are not being aligned to the Common Core. They're to Alaska standards. Is that correct statement?
Correct.
Okay, next we're going to move on, because in a hearing that we had in the regulatory review, I'm trying to remember exactly, but you said in a hearing that there was something like 50-something percent Alaska standards were aligned in a previous regulatory review. Can you restate the alignment with the Common Core? And when Gary Stevens asked, oh, so we don't need to worry about Common Core in our alignment, you know, we're only 50-something percent aligned.
I don't have those numbers. I don't want to estimate on those numbers. But we made changes to a significant number of both the language arts and the math standards. I don't have the specific percentages of where we made changes.
So there's significant differences according to the testimony you've provided in here and to many, like three legislators I talked to within the past few days said that you stated we're not Common Core. We don't need to worry about that.
We are
and
not
even Marcy Herman sent me an email just a few days ago and said we're not Common Core. Is that still
correct.
Your official position?
That's correct. I think if you looked at the consortia that put these together, I think if you looked at Common Core websites, I think they would all say that originally 46 states were adopted the Common Core. Alaska's never been one of them. Now I think it's down to 43, but Alaska's still not one of them. I don't think anybody that's a part of this process would have ever said that we are that we've adopted the Common Core. So yes, we didn't adopt the Common Core.
Okay. So and you're saying our standards are different.
Yes. I mean there are similarities, but we've also made changes to a certain percentage of them.
Okay, I'm going to take just a 10-second break. Online. Okay, on January 23rd, 2013, a letter was sent by you to a gentleman by the name of Patrick Rooney, U.S. Department of Education, Office of Deputy Secretary, in Washington, D.C. You said, Dear Mr. Rooney, enclosed is a letter from the Council of State School Officers confirming that it has been analyzed in Alaska's new English language arts and mathematics standards in 2012 and found them to be nearly identical to the Common Core state standards. We are submitting this information in support of our application to join the Smarter Balance Assessment Consortium. Can you explain that?
I guess I just want to recognize that this isn't a part of the regulatory package. I'll surely be glad to go down this road if you would like, but the regulatory package is simply around the HSGQE, SAT, ACT, and work keys. It's not before the State Board of Education. Our standards were adopted in 2012, but I'd be glad to go down this path if you would like to.
Please. This is very important because it has everything to do with the new assessment.
Okay. When we originally spoke to our ability to join the Smarter Balance Consortia, we were speaking to the outcomes, the expectations that we had for students as far as what we expected of our students was very similar to what was expected of the Common Core. I think that's appropriate to recognize that the jobs that our peers, our students, are going to have to compete for, they need to compete for with their peers around the country. And so when we made those statements, as far as outcomes, as far as what we expect from our students, it's similar in rigor to what the Common Core has. Since then, as this conversation has progressed, we have, and even when we joined the Smarter Balance Consortia as an advisory state, we said that they are substantially similar. again, substantially similar in regards to the outcomes that we expect for our students. Since then, as this conversation has continued, I've not changed from that, but we want to recognize where we've made changes, where we haven't made changes, to be a part of the Common Core. There were rules about what you could change and what you couldn't. That's why we didn't join the Common Core, and that's why we've clarified the number of standards that we have changed, the number of standards we have added, and moved to places that we thought were important without lessening the rigor. So I think it's a continuum of a conversation. Right now, where our standards are our outcomes similar? Are we expecting similar things for our students to be able to compete around the country? Yes. Have we made significant changes and important changes based on stakeholder input? Yes.
Okay, but our standards are, you found them to be nearly identical to the Common Core state standards. And just a few minutes ago, you said the curriculum needs to align to the standards so we could be on par with these national standards and the national curriculum. So, you know, that's where it raises very much concern with many, many people in Alaska. So I'm going to go ahead and move on to testing materials because I still have a long way to go. Testing materials definition. As you know, our legal department has sent a memo, and they have concerns with your statutory authority and what you're doing. And also, they want a definition, as we do. In the very last section of the regulation, you've added a new definition called testing materials. I can find, nor can our legal department find, any use of that term anywhere in the section of regulations. Why are you adding this definition to the administrative code?
There's a couple reasons for why we're adding it, and I guess I will say, too, that just as a matter of protocol, I'm willing to have this conversation, but as a basic protocol, memos from the Department of Law regarding regulations to agencies that goes to agencies and to legislators are confidential in nature. You have the right to waive that confidentiality. I don't. But if you want to go down this path, and with your permission, since you have opened this up and waived that confidentiality from the Department of Law, I'd be willing to discuss it with you if that's your desire.
Okay, well, I'll tell you, they didn't say that I needed to go into executive session. They said I could go into executive session. I didn't go into the in particular details of the multiple page memo I got. I'm just clearly stating something that I have concerns with, this new definition, as they do in regards to this new testing material. And I would like to know why this new, when we couldn't find it anywhere in the statute or administrative code, why you're adding this new definition of testing materials.
So just for the record, then, I will assume that you want to discuss the testing materials that the Department of Law has discussed, and I'll go ahead and answer that.
It doesn't even have to be in regards to the memo. This was in my script before I even saw that memo, which I read in detail last night. I based it, this was far in advance of that, but I want to know what the testing material means. I can find no use of that term anywhere in the section of regulations, and we just want to know why this new definition is being added to the administrative code.
Okay, great, and I'll answer that, recognizing that the Department of Law, as you stated, brought that up in their memo, it wasn't mentioned in other places. Testing materials is in regards to security of testing materials that we require of all of our school districts to make sure that we continue to have valid and reliable items, that they have not been compromised by being released publicly. And so the simple thing that we changed here was typically, before the testing materials means paper and electronic documents, or it just said paper documents, materials. Now we're moving to electronic documents. We are also recognizing for districts that testing materials includes the electronic documents and software related to those assessments. So it simply adds that electronic comportion to the definition of testing materials so that we continue to have reliable items. Those are continue to be secure and confidential, and shouldn't be released to the public to keep them valid and reliable.
Okay, well, I am going to put you on notice. We are going to have a hearing in regards to these electronic documents. It is raising a lot of concern, and we really need to drill to the bottom. As you know, I tried to pass House Bill 257. It was too busy of a session. But I know we had a hearing, and you're very aware of our concerns with the Education Committee and privacy protection for the students. So we will be scheduling with the Regulatory Review Committee a hearing on these electronic documents. But we're not going to drill too down into that right now. So do you plan on intending to use this term in the future?
We're reviewing the memo, but we do anticipate we'll use this term with our school districts, as we always have, that testing materials need to be secure. Simply that responsibility to keep them secure. And we want to clarify that testing materials that need to be secure include more than just paper booklets. They include the electronic testing items and the software around those.
Okay, and as I stated, we will be having a hearing in regards to that in the future. Can you please clarify, is the term intended to oblige the state to future fiscal responsibility in some way down the road?
No. As I stated, it's simply to recognize with our school districts the importance of confidentiality of our testing materials.
Okay. And in regards to that, like I said, we'll have a future hearing in regards to that. And I don't want to belabor the issue, but in general, I'd like Deed's position again. House Bill 278 prohibits the use of money to adopt Common Core standards, and we are developing yearly testing that tests both the Common Core and the Alaska standards. It seems like both the Common Core and Alaska-based standards must be very close to the same thing, since you're developing a single test for both set of standards. Am I correct?
No, we're not building a single test for both set of standards. We're building an assessment for the Alaska academic standards. So it's only one test for Alaska standards. And I think it's probably important to note that although there's been some talk out there, and I've noticed on some Facebook pages that there's some language, although it's in quotes, there's some language that's erroneous that says the Alaska legislature said that, in quotes, may not spend money on implementing standards that are based on the Common Core State Standards Initiative. That's not correct. That's not what is in HB 278. In HB 278, it says the department may not expend any money to implement the set of educational curriculum standards for grades kindergarten through 12th grade established by the Common Core Standards Initiative. When that was introduced, it was clear by the legislature, by several members of the legislature, and it was testified on the record, and you'd have to go back and look at the records of those meetings, but it was clear that this was to put a hedge between our standards and our work and the Common Core. And that we would not move towards the Common Core, that we would continue to work with our Alaska standards. That was stated clearly several times, that this is not intended to stop the Alaska standards, but is to make sure that we put this hedge between us and the Common Core.
So that, that is debatable, because it says clearly in Section 17, the department may not expend any money to implement the set of educational curriculums based from grades kindergarten through 12th established by Common Core standards. So, I mean, that's something we can debate. What I basically said is that it is the same test. I mean, the same standard-based test is going to be for Anchorage, but is in full implementation of the Common Core, is the same testing that's going to be throughout the state based on Alaska standards. And that's why
that difference is
one test. Is that correct?
Anchorage needs to modify their curriculum to make sure they address the Alaska standards, not the Alaska standards, not our assessment, working for anchored in the Common Core. We have set our standards, we have set assessment on those standards. All of our districts need to make sure that they're preparing our kids on our standards, so it's not us modifying and compromising to meet the needs of districts. It's the district, if they've chosen a different set of standards, they need to make sure that their students are at least meeting the, moving towards proficiency on the Alaska standards.
Okay, so one, that, to make it absolutely clear, like I stated in the very initial part of this section, in general sections, there's one test, and Anchorage, everybody, all 53 school districts are going to be required to take the same test.
That's correct, and if they have a different set of standards, they're going to need to make modifications and change and focus and make sure that they're addressing the Alaska standards.
Right, and if I base this on the January 23rd, 2013 letter that you sent to the U.S. Department of Education, they really have no concern, because it states that, that Alaska's new standards were nearly identical to Common Core standards. So what is Dee's recommendation or observation in how we advance Alaska standards when they're nearly identical to the Common Core standards, yet the funding seems to prohibit this?
So it says that the department may not expend any money to implement the set of educational curriculum standards. So again, I'll go back to legislative intent. When they put this language in place and clearly said that this is not designed to stop the Alaska standards. The work we do in regards to implementation, that any funds that may be spent on the implementation of the Alaska standards are simply around professional development and work we do in districts to help them understand and begin the implementation process. The implementation of the standards is not the assessment. That's the measurement of the standards, not the implementation of the standards. Very clearly different. So our work is simply around any, you know, if you want to say funds that are expended on the Alaska academic standards, it's largely in regards to our professional development and our work with districts to help them with implementation.
Okay, and I have a question, too, in regards to the work keys and SAT, the regulations that are being put in place. There's going to be a hearing in regards with the Department of
Okay, well, I mean, if you have anything to report is what I was saying. You wouldn't know what to report. Okay, got it.
Well, okay, somebody's on and muted.
Whatever. And
a hearing with this. I'm going to take a break until
we that's muted. Oh, my God, the stuff that came out. God, I'm on mute.
06.710 and Administrative Code 4 AAC 06.790 with the definition, and it's requiring students to seeking a diploma to take the ACT, SAT, and Work Keys test once during the 11th and 12th grade. In regards to the SAT and ACT, I've been doing some research in regards to that and found the Common Core State Standards Alignment. It says basically from the College Board Research Report that these tests are now aligned to Common Core. Do you know anything about that? I have both documents here in front of me. We've talked about this at previous hearings, but the ACT and the SAT are both aligned to the Common Core. Can you state anything you know about that and work keys for that matter?
I understand that the ACT and SAT have undergone changes to match up with expectations around the country, but I have not followed that. I do know that both ACT and SAT have been around a long time. I took them when I was in high school, and they are the language that colleges use as far as admittance. Not all colleges and universities, but that's why the governor wanted it in here, and I assume that's why the legislature allowed it to be in here, because when we're preparing students for success in work and education, it's important for them to be able to have something to take to the university for admittance and scholarships and other things. So it's a language that colleges and universities use. That's my understanding of why it's in there.
So I guess what my question, I have both. If you go to www.act.org, it says ACT is pleased to be an active partner with the Common Core State Initiative. And in a quote there, it says they're aligned to the Common Core standards. And also, if you look at the ACT, the summary of the alignment between Common Core standards and the College Board assessments, it states that they're also aligned. So that's just something that I think that needs to be brought in the light. So I do have a couple questions. As I was, and the reason why I think this is important is because the state is going to be paying for these now, and that's why at the Education Committee and the House side, we stripped these College and Career Ready, ACT, SAT. We did not believe that the state should be paying for these tests. So my question to you is, can you please clarify if my understanding of this is correct? It said the ESEA, is that the same thing as the No Child Left Behind waiver?
It's similar to No Child, yes. The ESEA Act is the No Child Left Behind. Not the waiver.
So the flexibility waiver that we as Alaska received, the ESEA waiver, is the same as the No Child Left Behind waiver?
Correct.
Okay. And why did we need to get that waiver?
We didn't have to get that waiver. I looked at the responsibilities under No Child Left Behind, and the measurements became more erroneous. And districts were having to do things that seemed inappropriate, even though they were successful schools. If they were under that 100%, proficiency rate, they were deemed failing under the No Child Left Behind. And we felt that we needed some freedom under that, some flexibility under our to use Title I funds. So we, I found it valuable to pursue a waiver. So we did that.
Okay, so I want to ask you another question. And so were there penalties that the state was going to be, or was there any reason why we absolutely needed to get out from under the No Child Left Behind?
There were no penalties. Not all states. There's a couple states that don't have waivers. There were just further restrictions. We were giving the U.S. Department of Education additional control over the Alaska educational system to say what schools were successful and which ones were failing. We had to leave it up to them to determine that. And then what we had to do with schools that might have been 95% proficient, but we deemed failing and had to we had to restrict certain funds, not coming from the U.S. Department to us, but how those funds were used in districts. So we were really shooting for flexibility to more adequately use our funds and more effectively use our funds, but there was no threat of losing funds in regards to whether we had a waiver or not.
Okay, so, but in regards to this No Child Left Behind or the ESEA flexibility waiver, is this in place so that we can get I think it's roughly about $250 million from the federal government?
I guess you're talking about how much Alaska gets for supporting education. Is that what you're talking about?
I'm asking you the No Child Left Behind waiver and the ESOP flexibility waiver, which are interchangeable. Is the reason we got the waiver, tell me, explain the reason why you applied for the waiver.
With No Child Left Behind moving towards 2014, the requirement was 100% proficiency of all students. And we found that particularly that measurement of success or failure, if you will, erroneous, and that it required districts to put together plans and restricted funds to certain areas, not restricted them from the U.S. Department of Education, but how we use them within the state. And by getting a waiver from some of those components, We were able to set up a new measurement system, so we don't have AYP, adequate yearly progress, anymore. We set up a better system that allows us some more flexibility in how those funds are used.
Okay, so I'm reading a letter from the Department of Education and Early Development of July 11th, 2014. It says, notification of intent to amend ESEA, that's the Elementary and Secondary Act, which you said is the same thing as the No Child Left Behind Waiver Principle 1. First of all, can you explain what Principle 1 is?
It's the standards and assessments. It's making sure we have rigorous standards and assessments to measure those standards.
Okay, because it said the Alaska Department of Education, so DEED, is requesting amendments. The amendments apply to Principle 1, the College and Career Ready Assessments. They will reflect DEED's decision to develop new assessments. And it says the department is requesting comment by July 16th. And it says the districts are invited to submit comments to the ESEA waiver no later than July 17, 2014. And then the U.S. Department of Education, you have it in parentheses, USED, so used. And then these comments needed to be submitted to Margaret McKinnon with the from Alaska at alaska.gov. Does Margaret work for you?
Yes, Margaret's in our department.
Okay, so and then you listed where the waiver can be found. It's education.alaska.gov and then /accountability. So it says, to meet the requirements of ESOP flexibility, a state agency must develop annual statewide high-quality assessments and corresponding academic achievement standards in reading, language arts, and math, grades 3 through 8. The assessments must be fully implemented no later than 2014-15 school year. And this is where our concern is, that this is rapidly, we've jumped from 2015 to 2014 based on a promise that you guys have made to the federal government. Is that correct?
In an agreement we made to receive that flexibility that I just spoke about, the flexibility in regards to how our state schools are assessed, how we're able to spend the funding, yes.
Okay, and I need a question. Is content the same thing as curriculum? Can you use those words interchangeably?
No.
Okay, explain the difference.
Content is the subject matter that needs to be taught. Curriculum is the methodology and the materials used to teach the content.
Okay, so one is based on the other.
Correct.
So the content is the subject matter, the curriculum is the method.
Basically, yes.
Okay, so I'm going to continue reading this. Among other characteristics, a high-quality assessment must be valid, reliable, and fair, and it must be aligned with the state's college and career-ready content standards, as well as providing accurate measure of student growth over a full year. So what my question is a lot of people are very concerned about the curriculum and the alignment. When you stated earlier that the curriculum needed to be aligned to the standards, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so what people are very concerned about is that we're not going to have much say-so over curriculum. If curriculum is aligned to the standards, then we're losing some significant local control.
Curriculum should always be aligned with the expectations we have for our students. That's not new. We had our previous set of standards that curriculum should have been aligned to because that's what we were assessing students on their movement toward proficiency on those standards.
Okay, so you state that the curriculum needs to be in alignment with the standards, which makes sense, and then the standard-based test. So everything is in alignment. So when we were talking, when you were recently talking to a legislator, I've talked to several of them this week, you stated, oh, it's no problem. We can change our curriculum anytime we want. We can change our standards anytime we want. Is that correct?
Not quite. I didn't say we could change our curriculum. I said districts can change curriculum. The state is forbidden from intervening in curricular choices. Those are local decisions. But if we chose, because we have no ties to anybody outside of Alaska, we can make modifications to our standards at the state level. Local school districts have no tie to their curriculum. They can make those changes at the local level.
Okay, so but you signed a waiver that say our standards are almost identical with the Department of Education. So it sounds like quite, it would be pretty incredible task to get, the standards changed. It's a huge deal to get curriculum. My understanding is in the school districts, they have curriculum for 6 years once they buy books. With all this, I believe it's $25 million. Is that what the contract is with AAI?
Yeah, 5-year contract for $25 million.
Okay, so if you take the standards and the expense that's gone into that, if you take the testing and the expense that's gone into that, the teacher's education, all the money that's been spent, it's not such a simple task. And now that the Common Core, the ACT, SATs are alignment, and you say that the curriculum is aligned to the standards, it seems like a pretty high order to just simply just change the curriculum or change the standard.
Well, we would surely, as we did this last time, we took over 2 years to develop our new set of standards. You don't do that lightly, as you know. That's why prior to adoption, I made sure that we put it out for 6 months or 5 months instead of 2 months for public comment. And we had webinars. We had meetings with districts. We had public meetings, traveled around to 5 different communities in the state. We met with business leaders. We met with community members. We met with parents. Parents, because you're right. You're exactly right. You don't change those things lightly because they have huge impacts. So that's why we were so intentional, and it took so long for us to move into the set of standards that we currently have. I do want to correct one thing, though. You did mention that we aligned our standards with the U.S. Department of Education, or DOE, and that's not correct. We simply have our standards that we believe will get students to be ready to be successful in work and education. So, and because we didn't adopt the Common Core, we had our standards not only through all those processes that I just mentioned, but we actually had our standards vetted with our university. We sent them to them. They sent them to their professors who are teaching entry-level credit-bearing courses. To say, will these standards get our kids ready so that they don't need remediation when they get here? They took it to some of the other vo-tech systems around the state, like Avtech. They vetted them as well. So we had a pretty extensive vetting process with a lot of stakeholders, including our higher education institutions.
And I understand what you're saying, but a lot of people believe that the menu was set and they were just, you know, said, put your stamp of approval on this menu. And what I was referring to is the January 23rd letter that you sent to Patrick Rooney with the U.S. Department of Education that says that the standards are nearly identical, in your words, signed by your name, to the Common Core state standards. But we need to move on to a few other questions. Can you say how these tests, why did you choose AAI? That's our new vendor, AAI. Can you tell us a little bit about AAI?
You bet. As I mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, anytime you put out a contract, there's a minimal amount. But anytime you put out a contract for expenditure of funds or to grant funds, it needs to go through the state procurement process. And we did that. We went through the official process. We requested, we put out an RFP, request for proposal from vendors. I believe we had 5 vendors respond. We put together a procurement team that spent about 2-3 days on going through over 2,000 pages of documents to determine which vendor would score the highest. All those documents now are public documents. You can look at those proposals. And I believe actually we sent those all to you as well.
I have them. I have them in front of me.
Okay. And so through that scoring process, University of Kansas AAI was the highest scoring proposal.
So is it correct that University of California was going to be administering the SBAC and now AAI is going to be administering the AMP? You're calling them the Alaska Measurements of Progress.
Right. I don't know about the University of California. I've never heard that they're going to be providing, doing SBAC.
Yes, that was actually at a national meeting, so you probably may not have been there. I'm on several national education committee meetings, and it was very, very clear that through SBAC, the University of California in Berkeley was going to be very involved in the SBAC. So basically, I'm looking at Appendix D in this contract, and it says that the University of Kansas will comprise of developing, administering, and scoring summative assessments in English, language, arts, and mathematics. Is that correct?
Yes.
Did I lose you?
No, I'm still there. Yes, that's correct.
Okay. All right. So I just want to make sure that that's very clear that the contract between the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development and the Achieve Assessment Institute at the University of Kansas will comprise of developing, administering, and scoring summative assessments in English, language, arts, and mathematics in grades 3 through 10. And this will begin in July of 2014 and continue, it says.
Yes.
And it says it's going to conduct a bias sensitivity review. Who is doing the bias sensitivity, and what are you looking for there?
That's largely where our Alaska stakeholders are coming into play and doing item reviews. Bias sensitivity is to make sure we don't have items in there that don't make sense in particular cultural contexts. We're not using terms that someone might not know just because of where they live. So those are the type of bias types of things and sensitivities that we look at. It's a standard when you're doing, to really have a valid and reliable test item, you need to go through that process to make sure that it's valid for all students who take the test. But that's what I mentioned. We have a lot of Alaskan educators, over 500 at this point, doing item reviews for us.
Okay, yeah, so they're kind of keeping an eye on the menu. Okay, so basically what I need to ask you now is I've looked very closely at Appendix D, and you are using something called KITE. Can you explain what KITE is?
Yes, KITE is the Kansas Interactive Testing Engine. It's basically the tool we're going to use, the online tool we're using to give the assessment.
Okay, and also, so KITE is the Kansas model. I have a lot of research that I've done in regards to that. And also QuestStar, you have mentioned that in here. Please explain, it says, what QuestStar is.
QuestStar is simply the subcontractor that works with Kansas to help us with the technology component of this assessment.
So ACES is like the long-standing data that the state has. KITE is the delivery system. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then QuestStar, explain QuestStar.
QuestStar is a scoring, they're going to subcontract, but they're a scoring company. They're going to help with the scoring of the assessment.
Okay. So I've got quite a bit of information in regards to QuestStar and the Common Core standards and their alignment to the Common Core. So I do have Representative Hyland. There's several people, and I do apologize that I've not acknowledged that have been online because I've been drilling down, but Representative Johnson has been on for a significant amount of time. Also, Representative Hyland from the Kansas legislature is on, and Barbara Haney is here to is online to testify, as well as Lori Kopenberg is here to testify. I'm going to go ahead and get through a few more questions. We're going to start public testimony in about 10 minutes, but I just have a few more things that I'd like to ask. I went and looked up the Alaska Measures of Progress. Can you let us know what, how far advanced is this Alaska Measures of Progress? I see that AAI has a tremendous amount of staff, Marianne Peer, Gail, I could go through all these different people, but if you go to akassessments.org with AAI staff, you've got listed several different people from Laura Kramer. There's about 10 people roughly here. Can you explain who these people are and what they're doing?
I can't see that off the top of my head. They're all people that are directly involved in, as you mentioned, the large task of developing an assessment, not only the summative part, but the practice test, the optional practice test, the interim assessments, the testlets that are going to help kids practice. It's a huge task to develop an assessment like this, and they're all involved with that.
Well, now, are any of these people based in Alaska? What percentage of these people are based in Alaska?
Small percentage are actually based in Alaska, but they are working with us, and they're traveling here to work with us and Alaska stakeholders, as I mentioned, for practice items to be that are written and item reviews and things like that. So
out of, let's say there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 of them, how many of those 9 are based in Alaska?
I don't know what list you have in front of you, so I couldn't tell you. I would guess that if they're all from the University of Kansas, but they're based out of Kansas.
So we're going to be paying for them to travel up here, et cetera, with this contract?
Not it's part of our contract to work with them. And again, I'll go back to the, we set out a procurement process to get the best that would measure the Alaska standards. And they were the best proposal that came forward to measure.
Is there any reason why couldn't have used our own university or local experts with University of Alaska?
Yes, they didn't apply. They didn't apply, and I don't believe that they have the expertise. They don't have any background in assessment development. But that procurement process is designed to get the best product with the state dollar.
It just seems like, with all the emphasis on local control and with the performance scholarships and encouraging people to go up here and with our very independent streak, this raises concern of doing this broad change in education through the University of Kansas. And I have probably a dozen questions. I'm going to postpone those for now in regards to the University of Kansas and why we're using them. But I did want to just point out that I did read documents that Kite, that is the delivery engine, that can be put on desk, any computers, laptops, iPads, and it basically shuts down all the other applications. And this is in regards to the Alaska Measures of Progress, the testing program. So this is all part of the AMP Measures of Progress. And it says also that there's something called LCS, and this allows them to administer these tests when the broadband is not available. Is that correct?
Yeah, LCS is just a local caching system. It's in very high terms. You can either do it directly online, or you can download the assessment to a local cache, a local system, so you don't need everybody to be online at the same level. You can be accessing just your local cache, if you will, your local server. So that was one of the requirements we had to make sure that we could get it out to as many students and districts as possible.
Okay, and like I said, we'll be drilling down on that at a later hearing in regards to security, et cetera. But at this time, I'm going to see if either Representative Craig Johnson, Representative Hawker, or Representative Gaddis have any questions at this time.
Hello, Representative Reinbold. This is Representative Gaddis, and I'm listening and paying attention. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Gaddis, for being online. We truly appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Representative Reinbold?
Yes?
Yeah,
Representative Craig Johnson, thank you.
Yeah,
do you have a question?
I've been listening, and it's very interesting, but I have no questions at this time. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much for taking time, Representative Johnson, to be online. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for what you're doing, Laura.
Okay. And with that, I do want to let you know, Commissioner Hanley, that I am going to be having a hearing in regards to the FERPA laws and making sure that the data is secure with this online testing. And I will be giving you notice as soon as I can secure a date for the hearing in the near future. And with that, Commissioner Hanley, do you have anything else you want to state before I take testimony from Representative Hyland?
No, I don't think so. I don't think we have any regulations around the FERPA laws right now, but not on any other comments right now.
But it's all intertied with assessments. Assessments come through regulation, as you well know. And as an oversight to education, we need to ensure that our students' data is protected and that it's not invasive, as House Bill 257, which, as you know, is going to be coming up again this year before the legislature. And we stated in that committee that when you did do these assessments, that you were very cognizant of the fact that that was going to be facing the legislature again. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and see if Representative Hyland is ready to testify.
I'm here.
Representative Hyland, please state your name clearly, and please proceed with your testimony. We're opening public comments at this time.
My name is Ron Hyland, representative from the state of Kansas, District 51. And I believe you were wanting to hear my comments on data privacy primarily. Is that correct?
That is correct. Being from Kansas and familiar with the KITE system, I thought you were the appropriate person to discuss this.
We became very concerned about data privacy after a fellow by the name of Paul Schwartz. He's a data security expert for the military primarily, but he's now working in the private sector. He does have military contracts, and anyway, he came and testified before our education committee, and what he said was very disturbing to us. The fact that student data, and that he's talking about kindergarten up to age 18, is the most valuable data sought by outsiders because they can use that information and create accounts, and parents won't know this until their child applies for a student loan or a loan of any type, and they find out that they're in debt way beyond their means. So with that information, we became concerned about data privacy, and we passed out a data privacy bill. I was not real happy about it, but what we did get done was to disallow any personal information from being transferred from the school districts to KU or any outside vendor. And that's called aggregate data. But what the security analyst told us, that with about 80 to 90% accuracy, an intelligent hacker can backfill that information and identify the individual. So my other concern is now how to protect that data security at the district level, and we're going to have to deal with that during the next session. Because if you have disgruntled teachers or employees or whoever can get into that system at the district level and sell that concerns me a great deal. Now, on the other side, at KU, they were hacked. And to the extent they're not completely sure. So that data is out there. We don't know how much and how much of it is identifiable. But because of that, they suspended all testing or receiving of information from the school district. So we are in a situation where no testing or scoring is going to be done this year and possibly next year because of this. So the data security is something that we are looking at very closely, and I would recommend Paul Schwartz to you for information on data security and how important it is in our futures. And then beyond that, Kansas called KIT. It's the information that they are collecting on each of the children, and it goes way beyond what we feel is necessary for identifying and using for their future. So that is something we're going to be looking at, and the testing, obviously, and all of that is of great concern to us. So those are things we're going to be looking at, but the data security is number one for us.
Thank you, Representative Hyland. And I'm going to go ahead and quote from this article that's in www.kansas.com/news. It says, according to a news release from the Kansas Department of Education, attackers slowed down or disabled the Kansas Interactive Testing Engine. That's exactly the same engine that we are going to be using here in Alaska via the Kansas contract, the AAI. And it says they bombarded them with intense volumes of data that the servers could not handle. And it also says that the Center for Educational Testing and Evaluation, which is administering the taste assessment, identified it, and they were working to eradicate the attack. And I know this was back in April of 2014, but it was recently updated. This article was recently updated this week. So I understand, as you stated, the state officials did suspend the test across the state. And the reason why I thought this was very, very important to bring out is that this is exactly the same delivery system that Alaska is planning to use.
And I think you should be concerned because, in fact, the State Board of Education has determined that they will not be issuing any test results for this year and possibly next. And we will have to find out when we're back in session why they made that decision. Is it because of the security issue, or was it because of the scores they received? So that's something we're going to have to be looking at next session.
Well, thank you, Representative Hyland, and I look forward to staying in touch with you because I'm very concerned. That's why the purpose of this hearing is that we are raising this, and we are actually implementing tests according to this new regulation 1 year sooner, and it brings me grave concerns when I see what is going on with the system. So with that, I am going to move on to online. Barbara Haney is online, and then I will take Sasha, and then I will take Lori. So with that, first of all, welcome, Representative Tarr. Thank you for coming. Barbara, will you please state your name and testify, please?
Sure. My name is Barbara Haney. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right. My name is Barbara Haney, I'm representing myself, I suppose. I had a website that was reasonably famous, Stop Alaska Common Core. And prior to my time as a education troublemaker, I guess if you want to call it that, I think that's what I'm called these days, I worked for University of Alaska Fairbanks. I was a former faculty member, former homeschool mom. I did extensive work on test question and item preparation for college-level tests. So I'm familiar with the process. I do live in Alaska. I did not submit a bid on the RFP because I was in the middle of other matters at the time, and it would not have been appropriate for me to do so. However, I am deeply concerned with some things that I'm seeing, and I'll relate my concerns as follows. First, it was my understanding that we were not implementing the Common Core standards, yet we are still implementing the Alaska State standards. Patrick Rooney, in his letter to Arne Duncan in June 2012, actually calls them the Common Core standards. He states, Alaska also utilized two national experts involved in developing the Common Core standards. They were Brian Gong and Karen Hess, and I can go on about their credentials, but I won't. But they call it the Common Core implementation team. There has never been any effort until I spoke up to hide that these were Common Core. If you go and you look at the ESA flexibility document, you'll see also the letter, which I believe you have part of, that talks about the standards, and it talks about the Alaska standards being nearly identical. And even last year, in response to the education committee, there's, my family wrote that there was only a couple of differences in the state standards and the Common Core, and they're largely measurement standards, and those are detailed in a memo, by the way, that should be attached to the one that you read earlier to Mike Hanley. I'm also very concerned about these new assessments because I've noticed that a company that's involved named Questar. For those of you unfamiliar with Questar, I mean, at first I wasn't too worried. They used to handle the New York region's delivery system years ago, and I had some dealings with them back years ago when I was still involved in this kind of stuff. But in recent years, you know, they've had a huge turnover in personnel, you know, people retire and whatnot. And it seems that they are quite on board with the Common Core. In fact, if you go to look at the CCSO, Chief State School Officer Organization is what that is, Questar actually funded and hosted the consortia doing their presentations. They're regarded as a gold star supporter of the Common Core. They have very strong and very deep ties to those people who are involved in the consortia. If you go to even Diane Ravitch, I don't know if any of you are familiar with her. She was the Assistant Secretary of Education under two presidents, both Bush and, I believe, Clinton. Jerry Songer occasionally writes for Diane Ravitch, and she has some very strong comments about Questar, and I would encourage anybody to go read those, and I can post those on the Facebook page, Alaskans Against Common Core, if necessary. I think I forwarded them down there, though. My last concern, Questar, they hire heavily people who are engaged in psychometric research, who are very much into the world of Vygotskyism, and I still don't understand why we're implementing Common Core standards with Vygotskyism. Vygotsky, you know, I mean, I realize the Department of Education teaches him as, oh, teach by play, but Vygotsky was the guy who implemented the education system for Marx. I mean, if you read his book, he quotes, if you actually read his book, he quotes volumes from Marx. And, you know, we're supposed to be teaching people to lead and serve in a free society, not implementing the Marxist revolution. And I never in my wildest dreams, when I supported Governor Parnell, you know, back in 2010, thought that I would be fighting Vygotskyism in the state of Alaska. I do not understand why we're using psychometric evaluations and measurements, and that's what Questar specializes in. And if the university, if somebody from Kansas is listening in, I really would hope that you guys would consider doing some diligence there yourself with looking at what the fundamental underlying philosophy is behind some of these assessments, because it is Vygotskyism. And psychometric analysis, and I don't think that's where we want to go if we're preparing children for a free society. But, I mean, that's a broader question. I am deeply concerned that the standards that are being implemented are, in fact, Common Core. I'm looking at school districts are trying to order curriculum that aligns with the Alaska state standards. All the curriculum seems to be Common Core, except for a few data measurement changes. That seems to be the only difference. And it's very disconcerting to me. And I very much appreciate, you allowing me to testify. And if there's anything else I can provide you with, please feel free to contact me.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll be getting into curriculum at a later date, but because you did bring up Questar, and if you just go to www.questar.org, one of the top pages says, as a result of public school districts are changing what they teach and how they teach to align the curriculum to the Common Core learning standards. So that's right off the top with the Questar. But we are going to be having a hearing at a later date in regards to the data and the assessments and the privacy protection of our students and at a later date. But with that, thank you very much for your testimony.
Can I make one last comment here?
Gosh, are you online?
Hello?
Sasha, and can you please speak a little louder and clearly state your name and then proceed with testimony?
My name is Sasha Pettit, and I am just representing, I guess, concerned parents across Anchorage and the Valley. The first thing that I would like to say is I'm very saddened that this meeting was on the very first teacher day for teacher work day for the teachers in Anchorage and the first day of school for MAPSU teachers, because I'm sure that we're missing out on many valuable and informative testimonies. I just have some concerns, and my concerns firstly are we tracking students with all of this data? And I see that data security is an issue, as Representative Hyland has pointed out. One question that I have is, can a student attain an SAT score that will not be reported back into the system, be it whether they are public or private, or a homeschooling student? Can they attain a GED and then take an SAT and have those scores not be reported back? Because I know a lot of parents are concerned about privacy, be it whether their child is tracked or placed, concerning their scores, their testing scores. And the other question is, I was wondering what the GED had as a course of action if this plan, this accelerated plan to bring the tests in before the teachers have time to align to the standards, if there's a rapid statewide drop in scores, and I'm comparing this much like to Kansas's own test, we haven't seen any of the scores, and I'm not sure if that was because of the low scores or because of the security breach. But I'm wondering what we will do in concern as a result of this if our scores drop rapidly across the state. I know that he was saying, let me see, Commissioner Hanley was saying that we test, we don't teach to the test, but if we are teaching every child in the district to swim and the test is about climbing trees, then every single child will look like a failure. And so in a sense, we do sometimes teach the test or what the standards are, and I don't feel that we have an accurate representation of what the new standards are so that we can prepare our children for these tests. Also, I was wondering what the difference between aligning with the standards and being on par with the standards. We can make curriculum changes at the local level, but if the curriculum is aligned to the standard or on par or nearly identical with the Common Core, then it seems we are, in essence, using money to go against, you know, like what the House Bill 278 is saying, that we're using that money. And so my question is, to get around that, it sounded like the DED was going to ask the districts to use their funds to, in order to implement the things that they couldn't technically use money for. So it feels like that we're taking money from on a district level to do implementation that our hands are tied to do at as a state level. And these are all just concerns I've got in this short time from listening to everyone's comments and the questions and the testimonies. Another question that I have, as a veteran teacher, I noticed that he said within 2 years, the tie of a teacher evaluation will be tied into student learning. And I would like to know more about how they can accurately tie a teacher who gets a student for a tiny increment. Right now in classrooms, they're getting an average junior high classroom is getting 48 minutes with one student a day. They have about 130 students. And I want to know how they can tie an evaluation of a teacher to a tiny little minuscule block that they have with that student, especially when learning is built, you know, in spirals and in blocks. And if a student has not learned in third grade or fourth grade and I get them in seventh grade, then I don't understand how they can accurately assess that I am a poor teacher based on a 48-minute block with a student. So I guess these are all just concerns that I'm seeing, and I'm hoping that they will be addressed or that we can make some kind of changes here to stop this implementation, especially coming in alignment with the Common Core, because I know that when we say we're teaching to a standard, but that standard is in alignment, the curriculum always follows. And as a teacher, I go through on the DED website and I look through the page and I say, am I addressing these standards and how can I do that effectively? And having been a teacher on a curriculum picking committee, I know that whether we say we're aligned with the Common Core or we're using the Common Core, if our standards are Common Core standards, then we as teachers are going to be forced into picking a curriculum that follows the Common Core, because our assessments and our evaluations are going to be tied into it. And these are all just concerns, and I guess that's all I have to say.
Okay, well, Sasha, first of all, I wanted to say thank you very much for your testimony, and I do apologize. I know there was many, many teachers who were planning on listing online yesterday. Unfortunately, we had the Council of State Governments here at the same time, and out of respect for leadership, I changed the meeting, and it is very unfortunate. We lost a lot of testimony, and we lost a lot of people able to listen in, and teachers are the most important. It's impacting their entire career of this complete transformation of education that is going on, and I had grave concerns. With that, though, I'm going to see if Commissioner Hanley will say that there's three questions that I wrote down that I can recall. What if there's a rapid decrease in scores with the new assessments? Is alignment and on par the same thing? Can we be spending money with Common Core when the bill says that we can't? And can a student take an SAT score and not have it reported back to the government or to the agency?
Absolutely.
Okay, and Commissioner Hanley, will you please respond to those?
Sure. Which one did I mean? Rattle them off again for me.
You get to pick.
I do anticipate that we will see a drop in test scores, not because of the assessment itself, but because we've raised the bar. What we're asking students to do now is much more rigorous than what we asked previously. And so I would be surprised if test scores didn't drop some.
So my question was, what's the course or the plan of action? Because we know that we're going to see these test scores drop. What is your plan of action for that?
The same thing it is now. We want to move our kids towards proficiency on these standards so that not so many of them need remediation when they get to the university or to career training. So we're going to recognize those deficiencies, probably more honestly and accurately than we have in the past when our standards were much lower and weren't actually steering enough of our kids towards proficiency and success after high school, that teachers will have information to say, look, now we know where the deficits are and we can move forward and address those.
And I guess that's where it comes into the tie of teacher evaluation, because as a teacher says, look, now we can look forward and address those, that student is already in a new classroom with a new teacher in a new setting.
Right, but with information about how the student's been doing.
Okay, so, and Commissioner Hanley, I'd like to go ahead. I believe she said she was homeschooled. Is it correct? Are you homeschool mom, Sasha?
I am a former teacher, and I am a brand-new homeschool mom. My daughter's going into kindergarten this year.
Okay, thank you. And with that, Commissioner Hanley, do the homeschoolers need to take these ACT, SAT work keys aligned to Common Core to get a diploma?
Anybody that's in the public school system, this applies for all students in the public school system. So if you're truly homeschooling, and not connected to a correspondence program, not connected to a public school system, no, you don't. But if you're a part of the IDEA or Raven or one of those other correspondence programs, those are school district schools and public schools, and so you fall under the same requirements as a traditional neighborhood school.
So if you're in an IDEA or Raven are taking any type of public funding at all, you will be required to take the ACT, SAT to get a, Better Common Core aligned, to get a diploma. Is that correct?
The part that's correct is that if you're part of a public school, then you will have that responsibility to requirement to get a diploma to take these assessments.
Well, to me, neighborhood schools, I mean, if they're homeschooling in their neighborhood, I mean, they're absolutely part of it, but they're not using a public building. They're using their own private home to educate their child with IDEA, for example, or Raven, but they still are required to take these ACT, SATs to get a diploma. Is that correct?
Yes, correspondence schools are publicly funded and are considered public schools.
Okay. And with that, I am going to go ahead and move into the room. Lori Kopenberg is welcome to come. I'm sorry. Representative Antar has a question for Sasha. Sasha, are you still online?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Apologize that I didn't see a question. Representative Tarr has a question for you.
Thank you. Madam Chair. I really appreciate your testimony this morning, Sasha, and your experience as a teacher and a parent. And I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts for us about how we address the issue of accountability, because we hear a lot about accountability in terms of, you know, how much funding should go to the public schools, and some of that I think has inspired the effort to, you know, raise the standards and look at new ways of doing assessment, and I think we're trying to strike a balance between those ideas. And I just wonder if you have any thoughts about that, or, you know, if you hear from your friends and neighbors anything about that and what you think.
Accountability in what aspect?
Better performance for students and whether it, you know, how we assess teachers and their role in student performance.
It's been an ongoing hard question and a struggle. The best thing that I could say in assessing a teacher, we've gone away from, in the Valley here, we've gone away from the middle school model to the junior high model because of funding. And teachers in the middle school model were working as teams, and I feel that we saw more results in our test scores and our yearly MAP scores, and we were doing the SBAs at the time. But also, as a teacher, the SBAs were not given to me at the beginning of the year to be able to say, Johnny is deficient in this area, and this is where I need to build up, you know, help him out. Where I was listening to Commissioner Hanley, and he's saying that because of these test scores, teachers will be able to evaluate the students better, but those test scores were never made available to us. In a timely manner. By the time we got them, it was time for the next test. And so it's very hard. I would say to be able to evaluate a teacher, you would need to give them the tools up front, and you would need to be able to have the beginning of the year. How is this kid with this teacher? And MAPS did a very good job of this. At the beginning of the year, we assessed a student with MAPS. At the end of the year, we assessed them again, and you could see their personal growth with that one teacher. And I think that is a better way than the yearly test or even the exit test of SBA, ACT, because what you're going to get is an overall picture of what 12 teachers have done in the student's lifetime, where they have succeeded with him and where they have failed with him. You're just going to get an average. Whereas if you gave an in-house test, such as the MAP, you could look at yearly growth with each student. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, and Madam Chair, could I do one follow-up?
Sure.
Thank you. And are you familiar with the RTI, I want to say it's called, the response to instruction model that's being used a little bit, that I think is going where you're suggesting, with getting more immediate information so you can really make modifications, and do you think that might help?
I'm not familiar with it. I haven't used it myself, so I can't accurately comment on that. The one things that I have used are the MAP testing, and if they're similar, I think they would help because they give a teacher immediate feedback. And I think in order to evaluate a teacher correctly and effectively, that teacher needs to have the feedback on their students. I'm looking at my friend is teaching currently, and she has about 130 students, and she gets them for 48 minutes a day. And she has about, 32 students per classroom. And to be able to differentiate instruction and to actually assess those students and look at where each and every student is, your range of growth is going to be stifled. But I think that you could accurately look at an entire classroom and say that classroom as an entity has grown in a percentage.
Thank you. Okay, and thank you very much again for your testimony. And we're going to go ahead and move on right now to Lori Kopenberg.
Good morning. My name is Lori Kopenberg, and I thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I want to just give you a little overview of who I am and why I'm here. I have two boys, 10 and 13. So as a parent, I am very concerned about their education and where we'll end up. I started following Common Core about 3 years ago. I had my children in public school and then pulled them out and put them into a private parochial school. That parochial school was actually overseen by the Northwest Division of Seventh-day Adventist Church. So California oversaw their instruction, and they are Common Core based. That's when I started contacting my local school board and sending questions at that time. Is Matt Sue Common Core? Is it or is it not? So I started researching, and I found, there's a lot of grants out there coming for the STEM education, which is through the National Math and Science Institute. When you go and you look at that website, you will see that they are Common Core based. So that made me continue to look and look and look, and I was still sending stuff to my local school board at the time, asking questions. What I found out is through the SBAC requirement, when Alaska State standards were adopted, or in order for them to be SBAC compliant, they were required to be Common Core standard compliant. Alaska State standards are over 90% Common Core. What we have to remember, even though we have pulled out of the SBAC, the standards did not change. We are still over 90% Common Core standards. I think it's really important that our representatives and senators, if you're going to call them the Common Core, call them the Common Core. Don't do like other states are doing and call them the Alaska State standards when, in fact, they truly are the Common Core standards. You see the other states are removing themselves from Florida, Kansas. Many other states are stepping away from it, and it's time that Alaska either admits that we're Common Core standards or we're not. Again, we have Packard Gamble, Mr. Hanley, and Achieve Inc. saying that, yes, we are Common Core standards. That was a requirement in order for us to get into the SBAC. So I would like to see our representatives and our senators to actually step up. I watched the hearings through the Free Conference Committee on HB 278. I watched Representative Hawker and Gaddis and Senator Dunleavy and Keto and all the other ones. I watched all through that. And I also watched what Hanley talked about, where the intent of the Alaska State Standards and the language about not paying for Common Core Standard initiative-based things. Either we did or we didn't. And I think, to me, it's a doublespeak. No, we're not gonna, but we are. So step up and be honest with your constituents, because the constituents are paying attention, and we would rather you be truthful with us than cover it up. And this is an issue that needs to be dealt with, and we need to actually repeal these Alaska State standards or get something in statute that says we're not going to allow this to happen, that the representatives and senators do acknowledge that these are Common Core standard initiatives. We are pursuing it hard, and the reason that you don't have more parents here today or up in your office is complaining is because we're lying to them. We are lying to your constituents, and that really doesn't go over very well. So the facts are the facts are the facts. And when you have letters coming from Commissioner Hanley saying, yes, we are compliant with Common Core State Standards, tell the truth. That's all that we ask. Tell your constituents the truth. Thank you.
Lori, thank you very much for your testimony, and I would agree that it appears that all signs point to the fact that, yes, we are Common Core in Alaska. And I think that's the primary reason why I worked so hard on the Education Committee to bring concern to this, and that we did strip this out in the House version of the bill. And it was a bipartisan stripping of a lot of this language that I knew was going to create these problems, and it's going to impact every single public student, even private sector, even in the home schools that aren't taking public funding. Now these ACT, SAT, and the concerns are very, very real in regards to this, and I am considering having a very large public meeting to expose the truth. I think you're absolutely right. We need to either say yes, we are, or no, we're not. And what really was interesting to me today is what I've said all along. The curriculum is going to be aligned to the standard. There's really no freedom. The menu's been set. Everything's been chosen. It is part of the U.S. Department of Education plan. And we really need to continue to drill down in regards to this. And I really do want to put it on record. It's the State Board of Education that passed the Alaska standards. They passed the standards. It was not the legislature. And it is deed that was with the No Child Left Behind waiver. The legislature was not responsible for setting these standards, and we did not sign the No Child Left Behind waiver. And I think that's very, very important to get on record. Did you have an additional comment?
I do. I live out in the Valley, and just to let you know, our school board did pass a new math curriculum this last March. And yes, it is Common Core curriculum. They were going to be given the opportunity of four curriculum, and every single one Common Core based. It is what it is. And in order for our kids to be able to meet the demands of the test, it has to be Common Core aligned. And as a homeschool parent, independent homeschool parent, because I'm not going to subject my children to Common Core, there are so many curriculums out there that used to be pretty independent that are now explicitly aligned to Common Core, because that's where the major publishers are. They're all going Common Core. And it's all about the money and how much it's going to mean. You look at the billions of dollars that's going to generate for these few specific companies. It should be very concerning to parents and to our representatives and senators. So I think it's something that we step back. And then we also need to think about having an elected school board and not the state school board. It should not be appointed. We need to elect them so that we can kick them out when they go against the constituents' position. So those are my thoughts. But you're going to see, you look at all your school districts, every single curriculum that's coming in is going to be Common Core line. It's 6 years. Just like in Texas, they have C-Scope. They got it out, but guess what? Their teachers are still stuck with C-Scope because the textbooks cost too flipping much money to change it. So our kids are still being taught that stuff that it should not be in there. That's what we've just done to our kids. We have just subjected them to 6 years of Common Core standards because we spent that money, we've implemented that into the classroom, and in the borough we've just spent a ton of money teaching the teachers the new way to teach math or the new way to teach English. This is costing us a lot of money, so you're not going to see it change just because we decide that we don't like it. They're not going to. So we're looking to you to actually step up and tell us where we are and if you agree with this. And if you don't, then take this next session to do something about it. We are watching, and we want to see some action from you guys. You sit there on our behalf, and you do not have our permission to condemn our children to this. So stop and pay attention and do something. Thank you.
Okay. And with that, I will tell you, we are paying attention. We are trying to set the record straight. And we will have future hearings, not only on the data and Questar and the different issues to ensure that the data is going to be secure, but we also are going to address children with disabilities and how the tests are going to be administered to children with disabilities and where the parental rights are in regards to these testings. Is it an opt-in or an opt-out situation? So with that, our hearing time has ended. It is 11 o'clock, and Commissioner Hanley, I do want to thank you. I want to thank Representative Gaddis. I want to thank Representative Highland. I want to thank Representative Craig Johnson, Representative Garantar, Representative Hawker, my staff, and all the LIO people that have helped make this hearing possible, and most importantly to the people who came and are paying attention and to come and publicly testify. It's a very challenging thing to do, and we do truly appreciate all of you who are listening and took time to testify today. With that, the Administrative Regulatory Review Committee is adjourned at 11:02.